music, news, entertainment. It's all right here. It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
We're excited to welcome DJ Active to the show. He's a phenomenal DJ who's worked with Miley Cyrus, Jennifer Hudson, John Legend, and Kanye West, not to mention his current gig of being Janet Jackson's DJ on her Unbreakable World Tour. We talked to Active about working with these A-list artists, what it's like opening for Janet, and also being a member of her band. Up next is talented Canadian artist Dan Dolevsky talking about his burgeoning career and what it was like to work with super producers will.i.am and Tim. We wrap things up with a new remix of Beyoncé's song, Formation. Our next guest has quite the story to tell, having been a DJ for about 2 decades and sharing the stage with the music industry's best, including Miley Cyrus, Kanye West, John Legend, Jennifer Hudson, and his current gig of spinning for the legendary Janet Jackson on her Unbreakable World Tour. DJ Active, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hey, how you doing, Kelly? Thanks for having me. How's everything going?
Well, I'm great, and we're so happy to have you on the show. Been getting lots of requests to get you on, so I'm really happy you made time for us. And before we get to sort of what you've been doing with Janet, I did want to talk to you about your career. So how did you actually get into being a DJ?
Hey, okay. Well, I started in Philadelphia, man. My dad was a DJ, and I used to look up to him, and I have a cousin. His name was DJ Ghetto, and he was a famous DJ back in the, in the early 90s. So by me watching him, and then my dad used to DJ on the side, and at parties and shows and stuff like that, I wound up getting into DJ by watching those two. So they kind of the ones who inspired me, at a younger age.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I got into DJing, yeah.
And when did you figure out that being a DJ could actually be a full-time career for you?
Well, I would say probably when I was in school at the moment, in college, and what was going on was I was doing radio, and while I was doing radio, I had a manager at this time, and I didn't think that I was a teenager. I didn't think this was going to take off, and be a full-time job. I just thought I was doing it, just on the side or whatever, parties and school dances and stuff like that. But it actually took to a different level from me doing radio. I was heard on a station in Philadelphia. The station was Power 99. And they was like, hey, we like the way you're spinning up there. Would you like to work with an artist? And the first artist I started working with, his name was Music Soulchild. And he's like, would you like to come on tour? And I was like, come on tour? What am I going to do with an R&B artist? Like, I couldn't understand what I would be doing DJing with an R&B artist. And he was like, yeah, we'd like you to come to a rehearsal, see if you can fit in and bring a hip-hop feel to the R&B world with an R&B artist. So I was like, hey, cool, I'll try it out. And I tried to audition. And then from there, it just continued with me working with different R&B and rap artists from there.
That's amazing. And by the way, I love Music Soulchild. I still play Just Friends all the time.
that's
my jam. So I wanted to ask you as well, Active, how much of a part do you feel that your hometown of Philadelphia has played in your DJing career? Like, does it seep into sort of what you do?
Oh, absolutely, yes. I mean, growing up listening to Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince, which is Will Smith. Also, it's a lot of people who came out of Philadelphia. You have Gamble and Huff. They produce a lot of songs from Michael Jackson. You did a lot of music with Teddy Pendergrass. Did a lot of music with, I can go down the list. It's a lot of people that they work with. They're known producers, but Philly has influenced me a lot, as far as to be a DJ.
Can you talk to us about what gig sort of really started opening doors for you? I know you talked about Music Soulchild and then it sort of the snowball kind of kept running. But was there like a specific gig or a specific artist you worked with when once you did that, things just started to really explode?
Yeah, I think it really kicked off once I started working, I would say, with Kanye. I did Kanye 2009, 10, all the way to the beginning part of 11. It's like once I start working with him, that kind of opened up a lot of doors. And how I got connected to him is to a music director. His name is Adam Blackstone. He's the music director for Janet. He's the one who submitted me full time. Yay. And it's like once that started, then it's like I started getting like blessings of calls. I'm like, man, this is crazy. I never thought I'd be first working for Kanye. Never thought I'd be spinning for Jennifer Hudson, you know, and all these Queen Latifah, like all these calls are coming in. So I'm like, wow, they really like, I guess, the way I'm working. So I never thought I would be spinning for Janet Jackson. So that has been a blessing, you know, to be, you know, actually spinning for these name artists.
Can you talk to us about what it was like to actually, you know, meet Kanye for the first time and what it's like to work with him? Because I think a lot of people have misconceptions about how he is when he's working with his people.
He's great. I mean, I had an excellent time working with him. You know, I mean, I know he's very strict, you know, when it comes to his music. He wants everything to be on time, sound precise. It's a lot of, you know, it's a lot of rehearsals. So he was actually cool when I worked on him. I think he was great. I learned a lot from him, you know, to stay consistent and actually be on it. Like, you know, you really have to be on it. He hears everything because he's a producer first. So he hears everything. You cannot slip up with him. So, yeah, I thought it was great.
That's awesome. Joining us on the show is Janet Jackson's official tour DJ, DJ Active. You can check out and learn all about him on his website, djactivemusic.net. So can you talk to us a little bit about how you got the chance to work with Janet Jackson? Did you actually have to audition, or did she sort of know about you because of your work with Kanye and the others?
Well, I guess she knew about me through my through Adam, basically. But from what he told me, he was like, yeah, she Googled you, she checked you out, she checked your, I guess your website out and, you know, your YouTubes and stuff. So they asked me to come to LA to do an audition, but basically it was like a rehearsal audition. And, you know, from the blessings of God, I guess, you know, they liked the way I did things. She checked it out and they kept me on.
Fantastic. What was it like to meet Janet for the first time?
I was kind of nervous.
Everybody has said that, by the way.
Like, I'm like, that. This is Janet Jackson. Like, this is Michael's sister. This is Janet. Like, this is legendary Janet Jackson. So that was kind of, you know, it was exciting to meet her and be in her presence. She's a legend. She's an icon. You know, she's been in the game for decades. So it was definitely exciting to be in her presence and meet her. Like, whoa.
Now, I wanted to ask you, I was able to see the concert from the Unbreakable Tour in Toronto, and you guys, you know, you do an excellent job sort of, you know, hyping up the crowd before Janet actually takes the stage. And then, you know, what's really cool is you kind of become this member of the band. You're a member of the band. So what mindset are you in when you are her opening act? And then where do you have to flip the mind to get into being a band member? Like, is it two different things?
It absolutely is, because in the beginning, you know, it's about keeping everybody entertained, you know, keeping the energy up. So that's just, you know, the opening act part I have to do. But as far as when I have to become a band member, it's totally different, because there's certain cues I have to bring in, certain scratches I have to do, certain songs I have to bring in with the band. So that, you know, that's very intense. Like, that's not an easy job at all, because everything has to be precise, because if not, it can throw off the singers, I mean, the background singers, it can throw off the band or Janet. So that's a very intense part of the show for me when I'm working. I love it. I love it. I love it.
That's awesome. Can you talk to us a little bit about, because I'm going to get back to the band stuff in a second, but I wanted to talk to you about the killer, you know, remixes you're playing of Janet before the show starts, because, like, I was having a great time listening to you spin before she actually took the stage. So did you put all those remixes together?
Yeah, I did a lot of, I did most of the remixes. Actually, I did all the remixes. Every remix, except, like, some house songs that was already remixed that I played, but majority of the remixes I did, I, you know, reproduced and remixed them. So it was fun doing this. You know, she gave me the leverage to do it. She's like, hey, take some of the new songs and mix them with some of the old records and stuff like that. So that was kind of fun.
That's awesome. How long did that take you to get that portion of the show ready, your opening? Because it's so seamless and it's amazing. And, like, I hope you actually release a CD after, because it's so awesome. I wish we could all get our hands on it.
Oh, thanks. Thank you. I'm definitely going to release a mix of it. I did some mixes with some of those remixes from the show. Not all of them. I can't give them all away. But some songs I did play on some mixes. I did like a Janet Jackson warm-up mixtape.
Okay.
And that's kind of, you know, some of the mixes are on there. It's on my SoundCloud.
Awesome. Now, can you
talk?
But
it took me, let's say, maybe like a month and a half to get those remixes, you know, together and listen and, you know, combine them.
Okay. And then when you're creating, like, do you have a time of the day that you like to work? Like, are you a super night owl, or does it matter when you're doing stuff? Because I know people have different processes.
Yeah, I like the morning time is good for me. Morning and afternoon is when I do most of my work. I don't really like to work late at night. You know, sometimes I do, but most of the time it's done in the morning. In the afternoon, I do, you know, my best mixes.
I appreciate that you're not a night owl like that, because I also like to get my stuff done in the morning. So I understand you. It's awesome. Can you talk to us a little bit about the process of rehearsals before you actually headed out on the Unbreakable tour? Like, how early were you, you know, brought onto the team? And what was a day in rehearsals like for you and the band? Especially because what you're doing is so different than, you know, being the bass player, for example.
Oh, okay. Yeah, rehearsals started actually last June, so I had to be there no later than 2 p.m. rehearsal started every day, Monday through Saturday, every day until we left out on a tour, which started August 28th. I think I'm not mistaken. It's like the 28th or 29th is when this tour started last summer. Mm-hmm. So every day before then, we had rehearsals.
How long would rehearsals go on for? Like, how many hours?
It'd probably be like 7 hours.
Okay.
Sometimes, you know, 7 to 8 hours. Sometimes we do overtime.
And how was it like sort of incorporating again what you do with the band? Like, how does that even work, making your stuff work with them?
I mean, rehearsal. That's all I can say. It's a lot of rehearsal with, you know, adding in certain scratches and adding in certain cues and bringing in certain songs with the band. You know, it's a lot of work with the music director, as well as the drummer. We got to always be in sync with each other to make it work. If we're not in sync, it can definitely get off track. But, you know, from a lot of rehearsals, it works well.
What's it like, Active, when you're, like, because I know it's one thing to sort of be in step with the band, but then you guys have to take into account the fact that Janet is a dance artist and she and, her, and the dancers have to go crazy. So do you guys have to then sort of adjust a little bit too, like you said, with even like with Little John needing to hit the cymbal at a certain time if they're going to do like a jump kick or something? Is that the same
Absolutely.
Sort of thing for you?
We have to definitely adjust with the dancers. The dancers play a big part, like for all the hits, you know, bam, boom, like all that make, all that counts with the dancers. So the dancers, you know, usually they'll come in, or the choreographer or the creative director will come in and like, hey, we need these hits right here for this song. And then, you know, they'll bring the dancers in, and then the dancers will dance to the band and, you know, dance to the hits, so it makes sense.
Okay.
To the band hits, basically, yeah.
Okay. And, you know, I just read an article, actually, that Jimmy Jam was quoted in just this morning. It came out, and it was talking about how, you know, he loves going to see the show and how it's constantly evolving. Do you feel that? And especially, I know you guys are kind of still on hiatus right now while Janet recovers, but are you going to have to do a lot of, I guess, another, like, a smaller round of rehearsals before you head back out in March?
Yes. Absolutely, yes. We're going to have rehearsals. Once again, we're going to definitely have to do a few rehearsals before going back out. So it's probably going to take us about a few weeks to get, you know, get freshened up. The dancers got to get, you know, freshened up, and then we'll go back out. We're probably going to add some new songs, so look out for that. This will be good.
Have you noticed the difference between the fans? Because I know, like, right now, you guys have gone to Japan. You've obviously done a bunch of dates in the U.S., and of course, you did a lot of Canada. Do you notice a difference in Janet's fans?
A difference in Janet's fans? Her fans, they love her all over the world. It's, like, basically the same. They go crazy. The overseas fans, you know, Japan fans, they love her. It's crazy.
That's awesome. What do you want Janet's fans to know about her as a person and a boss?
What do I want Janet's fans to know about her as a person and as a boss? She's very nice. She's down to earth. And she's a sweetheart. And she's the best person to work with in the world.
I actually read that you put that on your website. You had a little segment where you talked about how working with Janet has been your favorite experience. Can you tell us why working with Janet is so special as opposed... Obviously, I know you appreciate everything you've done with the other artists, but what's the difference? What's the X factor for Janet?
Hard worker. She's extremely a hard worker, man. I mean, she's nonstop, and, you know, I appreciate that because I'm learning from her, from working with her. She's consistent. It's at every rehearsal. She doesn't miss no rehearsals, so I appreciate her, you know, for being so consistent and working so hard. So yes, it's a blessing to work with her because I'm learning as the journey goes along.
Now, are the band and the dancers a tight unit off stage as well as on? Because I know like Janet usually loves to have a really family type environment, and I'm assuming it's the same thing for this tour right now with you and,
yeah,
and the band and the dancers.
I mean, everybody knows everybody. We all communicate. We still communicate off tour. You know, so she wants, you know, it's definitely a family environment, which I appreciate. Everybody's cool. Everybody's cool on the tour.
That's awesome. I have to tell you this. I saw you make the appearance on The View where you surprised Raven Simone with the Janet tickets. How much fun was that? And did Janet actually call you up directly to ask you to go do that for her?
No. Actually, it was like her team that, you know, asked me, you know, to do it. It was her team and my manager that did it together, but it was a blessing to do that. I mean, she put her blessings behind it, so it was great. That was a good time.
That's awesome. It looked like you had a lot of fun. And I wanted to ask you, I know, you know, things have taken a bit of I guess a delay because of her needing to deal with those health issues. You guys are heading back out in March and the tour runs for many months after that. What is up for you, you know, sort of after the tour? Like, where are we going to be able to see you, or are you going to figure that out as things come to you?
Well, after the tour, I'm going to be working on a DJ album. So hopefully she look out for that after the tour. That's my main focus after the Miss Janet tour.
Awesome. And is it important for you to stay? Because I know when I was interviewing Little John, you know, he lives mm-hmm. in Atlanta, and I believe you're in Philadelphia. Is it important for you to stay sort of on the East Coast? Because I know I kept thinking everybody just moved to Los Angeles, but is it important for you to just sort of stay where you are?
Nah, I mean, you can stay wherever you at. I mean, as long as you still get to L.A. and New York and so forth. I actually live in Atlanta now currently. I live, you know, same area as John. We both in Philly, and I just moved to Atlanta last year. So I'm around the corner from him.
Oh, that's awesome. And actually, while I speak to you about Atlanta, you know, it just seems like it's such a hot spot for musicians and DJs to head there. What's so special about Atlanta that all you guys are sort of heading there? And it's been that way, I know, for like over a decade.
Well, I mean, it's an industry here still. You know, they have a big, broad music industry as well as for musicians, and you know, a lot of TV, you know, shows are here now. So it's a good place to be in the music industry currently now. So I figure I'll move here, you know, for networking purposes, and I just wanted to get out of Philly for a little while. You know,
gotcha. I understand. Well, I really appreciate your time. You've been so awesome, and we wish you obviously all
Thank
the best
you.
Of luck with the rest of the tour, and you're welcome back on the show anytime. And when you do that album, please come back on the show. We'd love to interview you about it.
Oh, thank you, Kelly. Much appreciated. I'm glad you had me on the show.
Excellent.
Well, thank you.
That is Janet Jackson's official tour DJ, DJ Active. Again, make sure to check out his website where you can find all of his social media handles, djactivemusic.net.
Hot, hot. So tell me what you wanna do. Don't do nothing.
On Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Click on KellyAlexanderShow.com.
Our next guest has an impressive resume, having signed with Interscope Records after a successful showing on YouTube covering other artists' songs like Justin Timberlake's What Goes Around Comes Around. He's worked with A-list talent like will.i.am and Timbaland, not to mention Canadian sensations Sean Desmond, Keisha Shante, and Tyler Shaw. His new single is called Knock Me Off My Feet, and we couldn't be happier to welcome him to the program. Dan Tylewski, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
What's up, Kelly? Thanks for having me.
I'm so happy to finally get you on the show because I've been a fan for a while and now we finally got you on and this is great. So I'm gonna make you work in this interview. I have lots of questions.
Let's do it.
So first of all, how did you actually get your start in music? Because I know we saw you from the YouTube stuff, but like, yeah. Do you have like a background as a kid?
Well, for me, singing was always a passion of mine since I was a little boy, pretty much. I never took it seriously, but I always just sang around the house where my mom and dad would just want to tell me to shut up after a while because I just wouldn't stop, and just always a big fan of music, and decided, you know, to sing at church and sing in the school choirs just to, as for fun, really. And then, you know, all I would think about was music as I got older, and I thought, how can I get out there? And, you know, I was really shy and really scared, and I saw one day a YouTube video of this girl singing a Justin Timberlake song, and she had been signed, and I thought, why have I never thought of that? So I posted a video of, like you said, my singing Justin Timberlake's What Goes Around Comes Around, and I thought, you know, I could be in my bedroom. No one's going to see me. I could just do it on my webcam, and it just blew up from there, and it was just a crazy ride.
Now, when you did the video, the JT song, how long did it take you before you, A, started to get, like, people viewing? Because there's so many people out there. I'm always appalled that, like, you know, somebody will latch on and then it just starts to grow. So how long did it take for you to sort of start seeing those hits build up? And then when did you get contacted from the States?
Yeah, okay, well, basically, I posted the first video in June of 2007, and within a day, I think I had around 100 to 200 views, but I was so scared to look at the comments and reactions, I posted the video and then never looked back for like 3 or 4 days, and then when I looked, I had close to 500 views in 4 days, and to this day, I really don't know how the views kind of came in. I think it was a big song at the time, and people were searching it, as well as there was a lot of competition of people singing cover songs at the time. It was a new thing, so I think I got in there at the right time, and not a lot of guys were doing it either, so I think I caught people's attention that way, and people liked my voice, and I started getting comments from fans at the time saying, oh, can you sing this song next? And I love your voice. Can you do this one? And I thought, this is crazy. Like, people want to hear me sing, so I started doing covers for them, or more requests for them, and within 3 or 4 months, so that was June, by October, they YouTube.com featured my video on the main page unexpectedly, and it changed my life overnight. The whole world pretty much was exposed to my videos, and then I had every label fighting for me at that point, and I was living in Georgetown, Ontario, about 40 minutes from Toronto. It was a small little town, and I have all these major labels and all over the country and the world, and America, just kind of sending contracts and bidding wars. It was pretty surreal. And I eventually signed in the spring after October. So 6 months later, so almost a year later, I officially signed with Interscope Records.
Wow, that is awesome. And what was it like to be brought down there? Like, who contacted you and did they bring you down to sort of check you out and all that sort of good stuff?
So I got a call. I actually got a message on MySpace when MySpace was the thing at the time. And remember that?
I do.
And I thought it was fake, actually. And it was a producer by the name of Polo de Don. He was this urban producer, and he had messaged me saying, what's your number? We want to sign you. Very short and sweet. And it was too good to be true. And I thought, you know what? I'll just give him my number. Just go for it. Gave him the number and get a call. His name's Polo. I get a call from him, and he passes the phone to Jimmy Iovine from Interscope Records, and they just said, do you know who I am? And I was like, yeah, I do. I really didn't, though. I said, yeah, I do. And he said, we want to fly you to L.A. tonight, and we want to sign you. Over the phone, they're telling me this, and it was around 8 at night when I got the call, and then next thing I know, I took a red-eye to L.A., and I had no idea where I was going, and I get off the plane, and there's a guy holding my name on a big sign, like this limo driver, and they take me to Jimmy Iovine's mansion, and I sit up in his library amongst the Pussycat Dolls and the singer rapper Nelly, and there's myself, and it was just like so out of body and surreal. And he just listened to my music over his speakers in his library and slapped the contract down in front of me, and kind of the rest is history.
Wow.
So, crazy.
That is crazy. And so what was it like, after you signed? Like, were you sort of whisked away to like band camp, for lack of a better word?
Yeah, pretty much. We called it artist development, and they put me in choreography, working out with the trainer, media training. I didn't get to write any of the songs, so I'd walk into a studio session. They would say, here's your song you're doing today, whether you like it or not. Take one listen, start to finish, and then get in the booth. And we would do it line by line. So it was very just like, do as they tell me. Mm-hmm. I was so excited and eager to get my career started and be amongst some of these biggest producers in the world. Like, I would be in with Will.i.am from Black Eyed Peas or Timbaland, and I was just, such a fish out of water, but so excited. So I was like, yeah, I'll do whatever it takes. And but deep down, though, I just felt like the songs weren't truly me, but I was just like, I'm going to do this. And it was just pretty much, like an art band camp, artist development, for about 2 to 3 years straight. So
wow. And what was it like working with, like, a Will.i.am and a Timbaland? Like, are they as cool as we think they are?
Yeah, they're actually a lot more quiet than you would think. And you see their persona, in the entertainment world, and they're very in your face, larger than life. And you go there, and they're very dedicated. They work hard, very intelligent. They know what they want to do, perfectionists. And, I would sit back like a fly on the wall and just watch. And it wasn't as crazy, as exciting as you'd think it would be going into the session, but they're professional, and they work, and they make sure they get the best takes, and nothing is really good enough in their eyes. So you might think, oh, I just killed that take, and they're like, nope, do it again. And, you know, 14, 15 hours later, you're still recording the same stuff. But when you hear the finished product, you know exactly why they are where they are in their careers, because they're just so talented and they have a great ear. And it was amazing. It was so surreal.
Joining us on the show is recording artist Dan Tylewski. Make sure to check out his website, dantylewski.com, and you can follow him on all his social media. Dan, why did you make the decision then to sort of leave the States and come back home to Canada?
Well, basically, I decided to leave the whole situation in the States because it had been 4 years of pretty much artist development and constant recording, and I never really had a shot at releasing my own music. I think the label didn't really know what to do with me after a certain amount of time. You know, I worked with a lot of urban producers, so they saw me as a very urban kind of R&B artist, where the label really wanted me to be some pop, you know, little boy next door, pretty boy, you know. They couldn't blend the two together. It was going back and forth and back and forth. And so in the meantime, they just thought, well, we'll just kind of throw Dan in the studio and keep him happy and record. And it got old quickly. And, you know, when you're out in the States and you're alone, you don't really have your friends and family, and you're just constantly working, it's draining emotionally and mentally. And I decided one time to fly home for a bit. And, you know, I just kind of took a breather from it for a month. And when I went back, I just wasn't happy. And, you know, they tried to argue that they would put my music out and, you know, to sit tight. And I was like, I have to leave. And we kind of went back and forth for a year in that label situation, and finally decided to let me go. And it was bittersweet because I was like, am I making the right decision? I have no idea. But I came back home to Georgetown, and I had to start over completely. And it was pretty much like having everyone at my fingertips, these biggest names in the world, to coming to Canada and just starting from the bottom, really. So.
Wow. Now, what lessons did you take away from your time in Los Angeles? Because like you said, you were working with all these big guns. I'm mm-hmm. sure you learned quite a bit, and you've been able to apply it coming back home to Canada, which obviously we're not a slouch. We have a great music scene. But what did you learn the most, and how did you apply it?
Well, basically, I learned that, you know, to work hard and to not give up. I saw the work ethics of a lot of these big producers, and like I said earlier, you can see why they got to where they are. And I would learn everything they could tell me, you know, how to sing better, what kind of stuff to talk about, how I can interact with fans, and it basically become like a perfectionist at music. And I took all of that here, and I would sit back and watch some of the biggest writers in the world craft these songs. And there is a method to writing great pop songs. And when I came back, I was fortunate enough that having this Interscope kind of title attached to my name, people were willing to let me in their doors of their studios and give me a chance. And I knew how it took, because I would always write as a child and a teenager. I'd have little poems and lyrics, nothing amazing, but I'd always try it. And I thought, you know what, I want to take a stab at it. You know, I think I had 4 years solid of seeing what some of the best songs ever being written. You know, I got to sit and see a friend of mine in the States write Rihanna, What's My Name, or S&M. I was there for these sessions. So just to see that and bring it to Canada, I was very fortunate to get in the doors here and then start writing for other artists. I thought people saw me as some YouTube kid that just got, you know, plucked out of Georgetown, Ontario, and into LA and didn't really deserve it. And I thought I should really build my resume and show people, you know, I'm a writer as well. And started writing for other artists in Canada and placing songs on radio, and spent about 3 to 4 years doing that, as well as doing my own thing. But I just really wanted to build that resume. And yeah, just, you know, being a perfectionist, working hard and making sure that you have those radio quote unquote hits.
What's your thoughts, Dan, on, you know, the Justin Bieber and the Shawn Mendes and how their careers have turned out in the States and then obviously gone global?
Yeah, I actually think it's amazing to see someone like Justin Bieber or Shawn Mendes, you know, come from Canada and, you know, make it worldwide. You know, it's really it's exciting as an artist to see that what the possibilities are out there. And, you know, I think people always used to think of Canada as small time. And, you know, if you're a Canadian artist, you're stuck here. And, you know, it just proved that as of now, even, it hasn't been this way since the early 90s, where some of the biggest worldwide talent are Canadians. And it's just so amazing to see that coming out at this time of the in life, you know, and seeing Alessia Cara, Shawn Mendes, Justin Bieber, The Weeknd. It's just it's amazing to see where they're taking the music from Canada and taking it worldwide.
How do you feel, Dan, about how you've sort of made this resurgence? Well, it's not really a resurgence here in Canada, but it's kind of like you're carving your path. But like, you know, Guilty as Sin was last year. The latest single is Knock Me Off My Feet. Do you feel like you're climbing the mountain at a great pace and you're headed to where you want to be?
Yeah, I feel like when I started with Interscope, I didn't know who I was as a person, as an artist, and I got to make a lot of mistakes behind the scenes where I feel like if my music had come out, and I don't think it would have done as well as I would have wanted, actually, and I wasn't confident, and I think spending all this time behind closed doors and working behind the scenes, I could build confidence in myself, figure out what I wanted to sing about, you know, figure out what kind of artist I wanted to be and be true to myself, and I was so scared with Guilty of Sin because, you know, on paper, it's a little bit, you know, explicit and it kind of pushed the envelope a little bit, and I had no idea how the country was going to take on it. And, you know, it did really well. I was really excited about that. And it's slow and steady for me, you know. I'm so grateful that people are even playing the song and people are buying it on iTunes and listening on Spotify. And I'm happy. I'm really happy. And, I just want to take it one step at a time. But I want to conquer the world at some point. But it's a nice speed right now, and I'm content.
Talk to us about Knock Me Off My Feet, because it's so catchy. The song is just, like, as soon as you hear it, it's like ear candy, and you're like, woo, and you're off to the races. So where did you come up with the idea, and did you have an idea, or did you have a thought process that this song was going to go?
Well, it's a funny story, because Guilty of Sin, obviously, it's a totally different, you know, lyrical content and feel, and I thought, you know what, I tackled that, and I wanted it to go with something different. It was in August of 2015, and I came in the studio, and I said, you know, I just want to make a song that makes you feel good, kind of nothing complicated, just something that you can play on a wedding dance floor and that you can play with all your friends and your little nephews and nieces can sing to it and your grandparents can sing to it. And I was just in a really great mood that day. And the producer started kind of fooling around with some chords and it just came. And I feel like some of the best songs that I write come in 15, 20 minutes. And it was just, it was too good to be true in the moment. And we actually sat on the song for a while. We had written in August and then kind of pushed it, you know, kind of put it to the side on a hard drive and forgot. And we almost released another single this February. It was going to be a totally different song. And we were like, oh, wow, like, how did we forget about Knock Me Off My Feet? Let's pull it back up. And we played it for the radio team and the label. And they're just like, you're an idiot. This is the one that we're going to go with. And it happened so fast. And then 2 weeks later, it was out. So, but I'm really happy with it. It makes me feel good and like a positive track. And I think it's very relatable and kind of that honeymoon stage of a relationship where you just get knocked off your feet. And I think everyone has been in that kind of feeling once or twice in their life. So
what's been the reaction from your fans? Cause I know you have a lot of social media followers, and with regards to that song specifically, how are your fans reacting?
The fans have been reacting amazingly to this song. It's actually blown me away. It's crazy because I had no idea what they were gonna, how they were gonna react to it. I tend to get really stressed when it comes to my own material, and you can only do so much behind the scenes, and then it's out of your hands when it goes to the public. But it's been amazing. I've had nothing but love, and you know the fans out there can be a little hard sometimes. And with Guilty, there were some mixed reactions at first because they were kind of like, you know, we saw this YouTube guy that we fell in love with singing off our tunes, and you know, now who is this guy now? But, you know, they didn't really get a chance to know me on that level. But with this one, it's, you know, it's still completely me and the fans loving it. As far as I know, radio is really digging it, and just all my friends and family. It just feels right. And I'm happy with the decision to go with the single.
Can we expect an album from you at some point soon, or are you concentrating on singles? Because I often feel like we're in a singles market these days.
Totally. As you know, everyone tells me constantly, you know, it's a singles world, it's just really single after single. Being a mega fan of music growing up, I just am dying for the day that I can hold, you know, the CD case and have the little booklet. You know, I just used to rush home after school and listen to my favorite artists growing up, and I would spend hours just reading the credits and lyrics and who produced what and who mixed what. So for me as a fan, I want to have an album out one day. I know we're focusing on an EP later this year, so it'll be about 6 new songs. I have probably albums worth material of great songs right now that are just sitting on hard drives. It's just, you know, I'm still new to the scene as a recording artist, so just taking it one step at a time. But yeah, an album, definitely an album down the road, EP as of now.
If you had your choice of someone to collaborate with, who would it be and why?
Well, I can name so many artists to collaborate with, but I'm going to go with a Canadian artist. And I would love to collaborate with Jocelyn Alice. We've been talking about it for a while and kind of making jokes about it, but she knows how serious I am about it, and I really hope it happens one day. You know, when you get us in the studio, we don't shut up, but it's just, it's awesome when we kind of put our heads together and just the lyrics and melody start flowing, and I'm like, we have to get in a song together. But yeah, I would love to do a track with Jocelyn Alice. If I, you know, I'd love to be in a song with, you know, collab with like Justin Bieber, Ed Sheeran. I love Bruno Mars. I could go on forever, but But yeah, I think Josh Niles and Dan Lesky would be kind of cool, in my opinion.
I think so, too. And I want to ask you, who is your biggest musical influence in your life? Like, you know, that sort of just always sticks out. Like, a lot of people say Michael Jackson. You know, some people say Bruno Mars. Like, who is yours?
Michael Jackson. Yeah, Michael Jackson is the guy for me. I remember being 6 years old and watching his interview on the Oprah show, late night with my parents, and just something spoke to me from that moment. And my parents played him my entire childhood and growing up, and just seeing his work ethic and his drive and how of an amazing person he was to the fans, and just such a real, true artist. And there's been no one like him since. And for the past couple of weeks, I've just been digging into old Michael Jackson interviews and performances just to, you know, because he's my favorite artist. I have a tattoo of him, actually, on my forearm. It's just, Michael Jackson, my idol, and yeah.
Now, what are your thoughts on the current Canadian pop music scene? Because, you know, you and I chatted a little bit before we started the interview about, you know, this one and that one. Do you feel like we're in a great place?
Totally. I think the Canadian music scene right now has never been bigger. I think it's has opened up so many doors for us Canadian artists to explore other markets, you know, in other territories. And it just, like I said earlier, a lot of people had this stigma of Canada being a small time, and if you're a Canadian artist, you're kind of stuck here. But it just shows that some of the best talent in the whole world is coming out of Canada. And, you know, I've noticed a lot of people are even wanting to flock to Toronto to record now. It never used to be that way. And it's just so awesome because, you know, us writers and producers and singers always had to go elsewhere to, you know, get those quote unquote hit tracks. And now people are coming to us. So it's really cool to see how things have evolved in Canada. And I'm just excited to see how it plays out. It's really awesome.
What has it meant for you to forge relationships with fellow Canadian artists like a Jocelyn Ellis? And I know you're good friends with Tyler Shaw as well.
Yeah. We all want to see each other. We all want to see each other do well. And we want to see, we all want to collaborate with each other. We all respect each other. We all think we're also super talented. And, we're not competitive. And that's what typically you might see with certain singers and, you know, certain circles of people. It's trying to one-up each other. But for us, I just want to see them do well, and they want to see me do well. And, you know, I can be confident with them and play my songs behind closed doors and know that they're not going to steal my ideas and vice versa. And it's great because, you know, they support me. I support them when it comes to, you know, their shows and social media and songs. And we're just one big family. It sounds really corny, but, you put us in the studio and it's like magic. It's really cool. Love those guys.
Do you think that you will head south again at some point? Like, we've already done the LA thing, especially like really extensively for those 4 years. But I know a lot of Canadian artists at some point either head to LA or they're going to Nashville or they're going to New York. Do you think that's where you're going to go again?
You know what? I will never say never. If the opportunity, came to me, I definitely wouldn't say no. I would love to explore it. We've had some interest already in the past little while. In the States and some worldwide territories. So I'm just excited to explore those new options. But yeah, never say never. I won't say no to it. But for now, I'm just having fun in Canada and we'll see where it takes me.
I wanted to ask you about social media and where it fits in your life, because you have almost 240,000 Twitter followers. You've got over 14,000 Instagram followers. And you're like really quick on the retweets and stuff, which I think is awesome. So where does it fit in into your life? Are you like addicted?
I'm addicted. Yeah, that's the one thing I can't live without is my cell phone. I never used to be that way, but it's just social media has evolved so immensely. Like when I started with YouTube, it was just you posted a video, you saw the comments, and you interacted. But I really felt that when I interacted with these fans, it made them stick with me longer. They wanted to see what was next. They felt a part of the journey with me. And when I put myself in their shoes, I would have wanted the same thing with my favorite artists. You know, I would want to interact with them and hopefully that they would respond to me. And to see, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, it's, I wouldn't be where I am if it wasn't for those fans. So for some artists that don't take the time to do it, I don't understand that. But for me, it's like, if I see someone showing me a picture that they just bought the single, or they send me a video of them playing at their car, it's like I live for those moments and I will always make time for them. I spend like every night 1 to 2 hours going through every single message to respond to everyone I can, including radio. And I can get a little annoying with retweets, but it's just exciting. I'm excited by everything. I will never stop.
Well, we appreciate that, especially because when we're trying to play your stuff and you're retweeting that we're playing it, we appreciate it so much. So that's awesome. And
I
did want to ask you as well, you know, my show is broadcast around the world, but of course my home base is Montreal. You have a fan base here in Montreal. What is your message to Montreal fans?
I love Montreal so much. There's something about Montreal that it sounds corny, but it makes me feel alive. I was actually just there in the summertime, and I performed there a couple times, but the fans, for some reason in Montreal, are just on a whole other level. You can't compare them to anyone else in Canada, but I love Montreal, and I will definitely be back very soon.
Awesome. Dan, you rock. Thank you so much for this. We appreciate it so much.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
That is Canadian sensation Dan Tylefsky. Again, make sure to check out his website, dantylefsky.com, and you can follow him on all of his social media.
Hey, it's Dan Tylefsky, and you're listening to The Kelly Alexander Show.
Cool kind of girl, and you are what I've been waiting for. So take me to a place I know. You don't even know how beautiful you are. Never seen someone so natural, and I don't know how I can explain it. You don't even know how beautiful you are. Never seen someone so natural, and I don't know how I can explain it. 'Cause you know that you just knocked me off my feet, and I know I can't deny it, and I know that I can't deny it. Yeah, you knocked me off my feet, and I know I can't deny it, and I know that I can't deny it. Hypnotizing, it's like I'm out of body tonight. I'm flying, you got me on a high. So take me to a place I know. No. You don't even know how beautiful you are. Never seen someone so natural, and I don't know how I can explain it. You don't even know how beautiful you are. Never seen someone so natural, and I don't know how I can explain it. 'Cause you know that you just knocked me off my feet, and I know I can't deny it, and I know that I can't deny it. Yeah, you knocked me off my feet, and I know I deny it, and I know that I can't deny it.
No, no.
You knocked me off my feet. You know.
Can't deny it.
Knocked me off my feet.
My feet.
Can't deny it.
Oh no.
You don't even know how beautiful you are.
You knocked me off my feet.
You just knocked me off my feet.
You know you do.
And I know that I can't deny it.
You know you do.
You knocked me off my feet. And I know I can't deny it. And I know that I can't deny it.
You know you do.
Knocked me off my feet.
Off my feet.
And I know I can't deny it. And I know that I can't deny it. You knocked me off my feet.
You knocked me off my feet. Yeah.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show. This is The Remix.
Texas, I like my baby hair with baby hair and afro. I like my Negro number, Jackson 5, not a straw. I earned all this money, but they fucking ladies, now let's get information. You know you that bitch when you cause all this conversation. Always stay gracious, best revenge is your paper.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show. Follow us on Instagram, Kelly Alexander Show.
We so appreciate you spending time with us on the show this week, and a big thank you going out to my guests, DJ Active and Dan Tolevsky. Here is your thought-provoking quote of the week, this time coming from Wayne Dyer. A mind at peace, a mind centered and not focused on harming others, is stronger than any physical force in the universe. Please make sure to follow us on all of our social media. You can find our handles on our website, kellyalexandershow.com. And of course, check out our interviews on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/kellyalexandershow. Have an awesome week. You and I'll chat soon.